In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
How do they get away with this? How do the street communists get away with the things they get away with? We will talk about that tonight. Inez Stettman joins us to talk about the culture war stuff. Mike Benz with some information out of the DHS that is eye-popping. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, let's have a chat. Just you and me. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I have great news and dreadful news. I take that back. I have bad news and outstanding news. That sound better? Let's start with the bad news about where we are as a country. Believe me, there's good news coming on the back end of this, so just stay with me. Over the weekend, a bunch of Jew-hating protesters, the Hamas types, whatever, they were in Washington, D.C. You've probably seen the footage by now. They're defacing a bunch of historical monuments, spray painting things, putting Palestine flags and things, whatever. Kill all the Jews, all the crap they do. And we're not really talking about them specifically. Let's set them aside for a moment. Let's talk about why they get to do that. I saw so many people on the right, so many people, normal people, good people, looking at what's happening in our nation's capital to our historic monuments and saying, how do they get away with this? Oh, so you can do whatever you want to an American flag, but these people are just allowed to do this? Oh, so you can't peacefully protest January 6th, but these people are allowed to do this? Pointing out the hypocrisy. You know, that's conservatism in general, pointing out hypocrisy. So let's set aside the nursery rhyme stuff and let's talk in reality. Why are these people allowed to do this? By the way, spoiler alert, there were no arrests. All that vandalism, all that property destruction, there were no arrests. Why do they get to do this? And we're not just making it about them. Why do the communist street animals in this country get away with the things they get away with? Whether it's Black Lives Matter, Loot and Foot Locker, Antifa, the Hamas ones, the climate changers, the feminists, doesn't matter who it is, the Pride Parade people, why do they get away with it? How could they get away with this? Well, listen, here's the truth. We like to think about our country, I like to think about our country in lofty terms because I love my country. I love freedom. I love America. I love the life this country has given to people. I love it. But we can get way too lofty with how we think about things we love like America. Here is the truth, the God's honest truth. You need protection. You need protection. Let's pause on America for a moment. I'm going to go in all over the place today. Just stay with me. In Russia, after the Soviet Union fell, this is after communism fell, they had a disastrous time over there trying to implement capitalism, not really capitalism. What do we do here? But I was reading this fascinating tale one time about a businessman. And he was talking about why he hadn't been arrested, but his buddy had been arrested. Now, these are straight-up businessmen, not criminals. And he was having a very matter-of-fact conversation, and he simply said, well, he didn't have a protector. You see, the guy who didn't get arrested, he had found some rough, tough KGB types, and everyone knew if anything happened to this guy, these types would step in. His other buddy, he was above all that. I'm not paying any money to those KGB types. He's in Russian prison, the other guy is not. Here in America, the American communist has spent decades, decades and a fortune. He spent decades of time and a fortune worth of money building for himself a protection network. A protection network that gives the street animals the freedom to walk into places like Washington, D.C., L.A., New York City, you name it, and act like the animals they are. It comes from politicians. It comes from judges. It comes from all over the place. You remember when Gabrielle Cuccia came on the show and she said this?
Everyone started flooding all of the perimeter, everyone popping out of their tents, making sure that they have numbers written on their forearm. I'll tell you, since I spent so much time there, that these numbers that were written on the forearm, I'd spent the time with them. They didn't know I was part of Drano Media. They befriended me. They asked me, oh, do you have the Northwest Community Bail Fund number? And I was, excuse me, do you have the number? If you get any escalated law enforcement that you have interaction with, you will, bail will be set at $1,000, of which you will only have to pay 10% of that, which means I only have to pay $100 of a get out of free jail card from the Northwest Community Bail Fund.
What? Who's behind that? There are rich people in America and in foreign lands who are funding the destruction of this country in a million different ways. It's not just that they own CNN. They have all kind. They have a spider web of networks underneath them, left-wing dark money networks that set up things like bail funds for the street animals. That's one part of the protection network, the elites, the billionaires on top, the ones who actually pay a lot of these people to be here. There's a reason you see a lot of the same faces at the Antifa rally as you did at the Black Lives Matter rally. That doesn't make sense. Okay, so you have the money. That's part of the protection network. Another part of the protection network is communists took over the justice system in this country by taking over the law schools. Took over the law schools, then you get to make the lawyers. So when you make the lawyers, you make the judges. And when you make the judges, you make the law. You ever heard of Matthew Graves? He's an attorney, U.S. attorney out of D.C., name probably sounds familiar. Matthew Graves, he's the one who has been taking January 6th protesters and overcharging all of them and ruining lives, sending them all to federal prison. He's also the one whose wife, Fatima Goss Graves, has checked into the White House and met with the Bidens over a dozen times in just the last 3 years. Are you starting to pick up on the network yet? What am I bringing up Matthew Graves for? Because a police officer in D.C. was socked in the face last month. Matthew Graves made sure the person got 48 hours of community service. So the meemaw who sauntered through the Capitol has her life ruined. She's sitting in federal prison today. If you punched a Capitol police officer or a D.C. police officer in the face, 48 hours of community service. How does this happen? Why? Well, they've spent decades creating protection networks like Matthew Graves. And notice how I said he met with the Bidens? There's another part of this. You got the billionaires. You have the judges, the DAs, and then the politicians themselves. You see, Chuck Schumer is the Senate Majority Leader. That's a really, 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 really big deal. And Chuck Schumer doesn't stand up and do what so many Republicans do, look down his nose at all the right-wingers on the street as if they're a bunch of uneducated rubes. Chuck Schumer understands he has an army underneath him. They will do as they're told. And so when Chuck Schumer gets up to give speeches, he lets the street animals know, hey, guys, we got your back. Go reap the whirlwind for somebody.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch. I want to tell you, Kavanaugh. You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
And right after that, someone tried to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh. Now, that's all the bad news. That's what they have. That's why they get away with it. I do have some good news for you, and believe me, it is good news if we would just embrace it. It wouldn't take much to destroy this network. If we had Republicans with guts, if we had people with the willpower to attack it, no more live and let live with the dirty street commies. Freedom must be aggressively maintained. If we actually developed an aggressive mentality, you would watch these organizations, these billionaires, disappear. their influence disappear. Start attacking the money of these billionaires, attacking their companies, dragging them into court, arresting them, antitrust stuff. The street animals, you wouldn't have to do very much. You don't have to do anything violent, anything against the law. Arrest every one of them, automatic 10-year prison sentence for violating our statutes, and you'll never, ever, ever see another one. The truth is the communists who are destroying so much in this country, yes, they are dangerous, they're damaging, there's no question about it, but it's paper thin. It's just a tiny, tiny percentage of our society doing this. And if we would just find the courage to attack it, we could save the United States of America. You know that El Salvador was the murder capital of the world, certainly the murder capital of Latin America, like 15 minutes ago. And now it's the safest place in Latin America, probably the safest place in the Western Hemisphere, just numbers-wise. How could that possibly happen? Tucker Carlson sat down with their president. Here's how it happened.
We basically, in the roll-up of phase six, we basically pacified the country in a couple of weeks.
How do you do that? How do you pacify a country?
Well, the phases included the building up of the police forces, the army. We doubled the army. We literally doubled the army to fight crime, to use the army to fight crime. And we equipped them. Before, like, soldiers, we didn't have, like, you know, like useful guns or, you know, vehicles, drones, you know, basic things that an operation of that magnitude would need. So, yeah, we roll up the faces and then we went after them.
We went after them. They gathered up all their dirt balls. Wasn't a high percentage of the country. Again, it's always just a tiny percentage. Gathered them all up, tossed them in cages. Now, you can saunter down the streets in El Salvador at midnight with your girl without a care in the world. We could do it here. All it takes is guts. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Julio Rosas has covered many, many, many of these protests, and he's going to join us next. Before he does, let's talk about something good. Speaking of Black Lives Matter and all this other crap, you know that cell phone companies we use fund this stuff too? Did you know that? I was talking about the funding network. I want you to do me a favor. Pick your cell phone company, whichever one you currently have. Go look up the name of that company and Black Lives Matter. You see, we pay for some of this filth too. Wouldn't you like to stop doing that? Paying for the destruction of your country? You could switch to PureTalk. PureTalk, same great 5G network. You don't sacrifice service. Keep your phone, keep your number. They don't give to Black Lives Matter. When they give, it's the things like veterans. Their CEO is a veteran. They love America. It's easy to switch, save a bunch of money. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. It's easy. Go check it out. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue. Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions, and in just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wild. Watching the Park Police and the Secret Service being run out of Lafayette Square in our own country, and the man who was there, Julio Rosas, national correspondent to The Blaze. Julio, well, as you always are, you were on the ground in these places. I swear this job you have now is more dangerous than your time in the Corps. What was it like?
I mean, this was the most overtly pro-Hamas protest I've ever been to. Since October 8th, because I've been covering these things for months at this point now. And before, they would use euphemisms. They would say, oh, we support the resistance, we support the martyrs and all this. But because Israel continues to make gains against Hamas and the Gaza Strip, basically the mask has fallen off. And so that's why there were a lot of signs saying that they support Hamas. People were wearing the green Hamas headbands that members wear over the Gaza Strip. And, you know, as is common with these far leftist communist protests, they started to vandalize the statues in Lafayette Square. Park police tried to arrest somebody, but because they were so outnumbered, they, as you saw in the video that you played, they got chased out because they didn't have any recourse to safely do their job. And I actually talked to one of the officers that got chased out. It's up on theblaze.com now, where he said that there's only 71 officers to monitor a protest that had 9,000 people, and they weren't allowed to wear riot gear. Their command staff did not give them the equipment needed for crowd control. And so that's why the protesters had free rein over the park to do damage to all these different monuments.
Julio, it's obvious that these people aren't organizing this, right? How do these things get organized? How do they get paid for? Who's doing it?
So this was put on by a couple of groups, by the Answer Coalition, which is a big lefty anti-war, quote-unquote racism organization. But it was also put on by the Palestinian Youth Movement, which is a very big organization that is backed by a lot of money, because they were advertising on social media about all the different buses that people could take to be bused to the Capitol for this. There were buses as far away as Detroit making their way to Washington, D.C. for Saturday. So, I mean, this was by no means just obviously a spontaneous event. This was put on by some pretty big groups that have been involved since October 8th, but obviously before that. But since October 8th, to put on these giant disruptive protests, and that's the point. You know, whenever they're blocking traffic or blocking airports, people ask, well, you're not doing anything to convince anybody to come over to your side. And the thing is that they're not trying to convince anybody. They're trying to make regular Americans' lives as miserable as possible so that they just give in and say, okay, we'll do what you want. That is always the goal with these types of protests. I mean, that's kind of common with the far left protests in general, but specifically with this, because they view as what's happening as a quote unquote genocide.
Julio, do you get the impression that of the 9,000 who were there, that they really were pro Hamas? That's kind of a weird thing to be. Are they just paid for or just spoiled rich college kids who were bored on the weekend? That's normally what these protests are.
I would say that, like I said, this had the most outward showing of support for Hamas, at least here in the United States. In the UK, that's actually been very, very common very early on, because they're a little further down the line where we are when it comes to this type of migration that's happening. But yeah, no, I think this, it's a little bit of a combination of kind of what you listed out. But at the same time, this goes a lot deeper than race, that we saw with BLM 4 years ago, because this is a religious aspect. So obviously, there's the radical elements of this movement that from a religious perspective. So not only do you have the race and heritage factor that motivates people to go out and do these things, but we've had problems with radical Islam and doing so. This is just kind of like a step in that direction. And that's why I'm a little concerned that, okay, now that they're no longer hiding their support for a terrorist organization like Hamas, I've seen Hezbollah flags as well. It's okay. So if you're not going to go over to Gaza to fight, and you're going to stay here, and you're spousing about taking down the U.S. government, essentially, okay. So what exactly are you going to do to accomplish that? And I have zero faith in any of the federal law enforcement agencies to take this threat seriously.
Yeah. No, they're too busy arresting pro-lifers. Julio, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Inez is going to join us in a moment. Talk to her a little bit about culture war stuff, why these things happen. Before Inez Stettman joins us, let me talk to you about waking up in the morning with a cup of coffee. Is there anything better than a cup of coffee in the morning? It's just the best. I gotta be honest, I drink it on an empty stomach sometimes. You're not supposed to do that, but I do that sometimes. Blackout Coffee is where you should get your coffee. Not only is the coffee amazing, it's delivered to your front door, and they love you. They love the country. I can't believe it. I have a hard time saying this now. That used to just be corporate America. They love the country. It's not very common anymore. Blackout Coffee does. They'll deliver it to your front door, all right? Blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse gets you 20% off your first order, all right? We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Great respect for our law enforcement community, and I realize the dangerous job that they do every day. Out of respect for the tragic death of State Trooper First Class Aaron Pelletier, We won't be raising the pride flag today. It's already up on the pole at half staff in honor of his passing.
It was a pride ceremony today at Weathersfield Town Hall, Governor Lamont in attendance. The flagpole at the center of the controversy. At last night's council meeting, Councilor Rich Bailey requested the town fly the American Blue Line flag in honor of TFC Aaron Pelletier, who was killed in the line of duty. Town Council voted it down. What does the Blue Line flag mean to you?
Represent racism and antagonism to many, many people. And even if you don't personally believe that and you fly it at your own house and you think it means something to you that's much more positive, it's just not how many people feel about it. It's not appropriate to raise over our town hall, especially when our flag policy prohibits us from doing anything associated with hate.
Associated with hate. People are mortified by this whole story. Joining me now, Inez Stettman, senior policy analyst for the Independent Women's Forum. And as your husband, Jared, actually has a great piece about this up on the Daily Signal. I mean, I'm horrified myself, but I'm not surprised. I understand that that's the American flag. Now, it might not be the American flag I want, may not be the American flag of our forefathers, but it's very obvious which flag are you allowed to besmirch, which flag flies over the embassies. That's the new flag.
Yeah, I mean, I think the left is smarter about symbols often than the right, which is why they understand very well when somebody drives a scooter over a pride flag painted on the ground, it's treated as a very serious incident, while when there is mass sort of a defacement of American statues of American heroes across the country, most recently in Washington, D.C., that is treated as no big deal, a little over-exuberance in mostly peaceful rioting, right? And I think that they're actually, quote unquote, right about this, not about the symbols that they want to elevate, but they're correct that there always are symbols in society, and they've declared what the symbols are that the society is not allowed to desecrate. And unfortunately, right now, that's the pride flag instead of the American flag.
And as I talked about this in the open of the show, a lot of people on the right, they wake up one day and you see this stuff and you're horrified by it and you say things like, how did this happen? And why isn't anyone doing anything? But we don't understand that it's taken decades of these people taking over the institutions, building for themselves essentially a protection network that keeps them out of trouble so they can do the things they do. That's what they've done. They put in so much work. It took decades to get here. And now the animals in certain areas get to act with impunity.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference, right? There's an institutional protection for this kind of behavior if you're desecrating the right symbols, and vice versa. Merely displaying the old symbols is enough to, if not by law, we still have certain restrictions from the First Amendment, at least culturally, socially, to put you in the social opprobrium category, right? Demonstrating flying the thin blue line flag in that example is a great sort of example of how that works, right? It's impossible to fly that flag off of the Capitol because it symbolizes hate. Is that what she said? But the various political flags of the left, of course, do get prominence, not only in capitals, painted on our streets, right? Washington, D.C. has an entire giant mural on the bottom of 16th Street that says Black Lives Matter. And of course, the pride flag is prominently displayed everywhere on the official forums like the White House, like in Congress, right? So again, these things matter. I think there's sometimes a tendency on the right to think of these things as sort of quibbles or let the activists who really care about this stuff really go for a fight about what flag flies over the Capitol. But actually, you know, wars have been started for less. This is not a small symbolic matter. It actually does represent who we are. And increasingly, sadly, as you said, Jesse, the pride flag represents America to the world and not the American flag.
Yeah, it is awful. And the weakness of the right when it comes to this stuff, Inez, and I'm not just talking about today's low-T GOP that I whine about all the time. Over the years, and honestly, I'll point fingers at myself, I was very much a hands-off, you know, laissez-faire type guy, live-and-let-live type guy. But freedom, it's very obvious, freedom has to be maintained through some sort of force and social standards. And if they're going to be the animals trying to tear the statues down and you believe you don't want to violate their freedom, well, your country's going to be gone. There's not really a different way, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah, there is no neutrality in the public square. I think what we've had for the last 60 or 70 years in sort of discourse in the country has been a public square where the left advances very strong normative like ideas of theirs about what is good and what is bad, and uses and infiltrates all of the institutions towards those actual concrete purposes of what they want to see in terms of content pumped out by these institutions, whether we're talking about K-12 schools, whether we're talking about universities, whether we're talking about government agencies. They have an actual agenda and concrete set of principles that they're pushing forward. And then the right retreats to proceduralism. Now, I'm not against proceduralism. I mean, it's very important to set rules of the road, but that ultimately we've seen what happens when that's the case, right? What happens is the right retreats into saying, well, everybody has the right to say whatever they want, which is true, but doesn't actually address the fact that one view is being advanced in a very aggressive way through the institutions. And we've totally lost the ability of thinking about things in the way that I think was very common in the United States and in politics, particularly before the 1960s, which is the states are the venue, primarily depending on the issue, but the states are the venue where we as citizens get together and vote on what we think is good, not just what rules of the road there are, what neutral sort of protections we're all going to agree to, but what we think is good. And there are parts of the right that I think are interested in recovering that. But I think that's what you're pointing to when you say that that the right has this sort of constitutional weakness where for the last 50, 60, 70 years, it's not meeting fire with fire. It'll meet fire with some kind of glancing off blow about, well, everybody, has freedom of speech or the right to protest and doesn't actually address the content of what is being pushed in our institutions. We have to get more comfortable with just enforcing a vision of the good and actually confronting a vision of the good that I think, obviously I think the right has the correct vision of the good. And I think we have a very good quote unquote argument to make. And that is what politics is. That's what making law is. All law has some kind of foundation of morality or perspective. There's no neutrality here. Except the right pretends that that neutrality exists, and the left has never had those illusions.
Yeah, it's just a cloak for cowardice, in my opinion, for the most part. We know all the right things to do. Of course, we're not going to actually do any of those things. That would be too icky. I don't want to get my hands dirty, but I definitely know the right thing to do. And as thank you so much. I'm out of time. I could talk to you for an hour. Come back soon. All right.
Thanks, Jess. That was good.
DHS. They're out there worried about language. Trying to control language. Language is everything. How often have we talked about that on this show? Language is everything. Let's talk to Mike Benz about what they're doing at DHS. That's a fairly important organization. Before we talk to Mike, I am a little bit wired up today. And here's why. Good sleep, 8-9 hours of sleep a night, it adds up. When you're not sleeping, it adds up too. You can go one night where you got 5 hours, 6 hours. I'm a little tired. You go two nights, okay, it's not feeling great. Three nights, you're starting to snap at people who are nice to you. It works the opposite way when you're piling on 8 hours. That's what Beam does for you. You know that? They have this stuff called Dream Powder. It's all natural. You know how that's what I prefer, natural. It's melatonin, things like that. It's a little cup of hot chocolate, essentially. Cinnamon hot chocolate is what mine is. That's my flavor. And I just sit there while I'm reading a book or watching a show with the wife before we go to bed. I just sip on a cup and then, boom, I'm gone. And when I wake up, I'm ready. And now it's been 2-3 weeks. I'm in a whole different place. Go get some of this. Huge discount. How about 40% off? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions in just a second. I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have responsibility, Terry. We did not have any accountability for what was going on there, and we should have. This is ridiculous. You're going to ask me in the middle of the thing when they've already breached the inaugural stuff should we call the Capitol Police? I mean, the National Guard? Why weren't the National Guard there to begin with?
They thought that they had sufficient resources.
There's not a question of how they had, but they don't know. They clearly didn't know, and I take responsibility for not having them just prepare for more.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? That's Nancy Pelosi at January 6th talk. Joining me now, glad he is back, Mike Benz, Executive Director for the Foundation for Freedom Online. Mike, that's an interesting video. What do you make of all that?
It's an interesting video for a few reasons. First of all, there was a fantastic article this week on the role of Mark Milley and the U.S. military in the run-up and the events of January 6th. Nancy Pelosi was, essentially in charge of Capitol security. I think that this video is a very interesting supplement to a previous one, which was recorded, I believe, with Nancy Pelosi's daughter doing sort of like a documentary in the Capitol on January 6th, where as the perimeter is being breached, Nancy Pelosi is giddy with excitement, where she said, "I knew this was going to happen. I was waiting for something like this to happen. Basically, now we got him for trespassing." I don't know if you recall that video, but it came out about 8 months ago. And when you understand that in the context of, for example, this article from this week of Mark Milley and his frequent liaisoning with Nancy Pelosi, a picture is beginning to emerge here. The benign version of the picture, if you can call it that, is that they knew this was going to happen and let it happen. I happen to take a much darker view of Mark Milley's role in this. I actually don't see Nancy Pelosi as necessarily being the brains of any of this, but rather a sort of vassal vehicle for effectively a military and intelligence operation in order to kill Trumpism after Trump. You see, and I can sketch some of this out, but I put out a tweet almost a year ago where I said, as time goes on, more and more, every year, every month, evidence will point in a straight line to Mark Milley for his role in January 6th. And I can sketch out the whole history of this because I think the Pelosi thing is, yeah. So first of all, understand that domestic rent-a-riots done for political purposes by the U.S. military are not an unprecedented thing, and not just by the U.S. military, but particularly by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, exactly where Mark Milley, as chairman, occupied. See, something was declassified in the late 1990s, which your audience may be familiar with. It's called Operation Northwoods. It's something that had a lot of notoriety. It was declassified as part of the JFK Assassination Records Review Board declassifications after the popular Oliver Stone movie created this impetus to declassify a bunch of early 1960s documents. And one of the documents accidentally declassified effectively in the late 1990s was this annex to a Joint Chiefs of Staff proposal to President John F. Kennedy called Pretext to War, Pretext to War with Cuba. And it was a proposal of menu options that the Joint Chiefs unanimously, but Lyman Lemnitzer, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, sort of Mark Milley 1.0 figure, a guy who was later promoted as Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. But he made this proposal to the President, John F. Kennedy, for the military to deploy its own assets and to stage riots on the streets of U.S. cities, to occupy U.S. federal buildings, to bomb U.S. barracks in the United States, to sink U.S. ships at sea, to hijack U.S. airplanes. This is the U.S. military proposing a menu of options to the U.S. president for how U.S. military assets can conduct a false flag attack on the United States in order to create the political predicate to declare war. Now, I had a very interesting moment while I was in the White House as a speechwriter for Donald Trump, where I was asked to look up what John F. Kennedy said about his own generals and one of the quotes that he had made. There's a lot of similarities between JFK being at war with his own generals for his policy on detente with Russia, as Trump's policy for detente with Russia, putting him at odds with his own military, Mark Esper, the defense secretary, and especially Mark Milley. But understand, the Joint Chiefs of Staff have proposed doing the exact sort of rent to riots that we saw before. 10 years after Operation Northwoods, there was an organized riot at the no less than the U.S. Capitol itself. In 1971, 1972, this came out during the Church Committee hearings, where the U.S. Army basically infiltrated and effectively set up a Capitol riot by the hippie movement in order to discredit the hippie movement as being, you know, violent insurrectionists at the time when they were opposing U.S. participation in the Vietnam War. Mark Milley, on November 9th, 2020, as reported by the New York Times, had a meeting with Gina Haspel, who was the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, who, mind you, came over from being head of the CIA station house in London, which was the exact place that plotted the Russiagate coup with the Christopher Steele dossier out of London and the Richard Dearlove MI6 networks there. And the direct phrase reported by the New York Times from Mark Milley's November 9th meeting, this is just days after the 2020 election, to Gina Haspel was, "There is a right-wing coup afoot, and we need to do something to stop it." Now, when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff tells the head of the Central Intelligence Agency that the U.S. that the sitting president is plotting a coup and we need to do something to stop it, that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs does not just go back to his desk and sit there with his thumb up his butt. What happens with a predicate like that is you launch a counterintelligence mission, where you direct U.S. Army assets, Marines in particular, who were actually the preferred vehicle for the Operation Northwoods plan, and strangely, about 75% of all of the frontline participants of the 12:53 p.m. breach, the initial breach of the Penn Walkway entrance of the January 6th attack, were Marines. And if you look at the strange cases around Ray Epps, for example, Marine, Maroon PB, Marine. You look at something like Scaffold Commander, who is wearing something on the back of his undershirt for service. Appears to be military. You have the strange fact of the pipe bombs being completely unresolved, despite the fact that this pipe bomber spent 90 minutes walking on foot in the military home court of Capitol Hill, and yet no skin cells, no hair follicles, can't tell the race, can't tell the gender, no leads whatsoever. You also have the fact that that person's eyes appear to be blurred out in the still footage from the DNC, the last footage that the FBI has uploaded, which was September 2021. Now, why would they freeze out the eyes? Well, you know, every military person has their irises scanned. If that person was if the pipe bomber happened to have a military background, and that person's irises would show up in any database that the FBI searched. Same thing with a felon. But there's military all over this. All of the militias, for example, that participated in January 6th, who were the Oath Keepers? Oath Keepers were predominantly former military. Well, that means Army counterintelligence gets to saturate them up the wazoo. A lot of people are focused on the FBI and DHS, which had their own roles in January 6th. But the military involvement, particularly U.S. Army counterintelligence and the U.S. Marines, is something that, frankly, there should be an entire congressional subcommittee to if those documents have not been burned, and they likely all have. But there is a totally almost unexplored angle here. When you understand the military history of doing these things in the past, the direct language of Mark Milley, his now stipulated actions to essentially have this thing carried out, even Nancy Pelosi effectively punting to blame on Mark Milley's crew. And I think she's not necessarily actually wrong on that.
Jeez, that is so, it is so much to digest. I guess I have a million questions I could ask, and sadly we don't have an hour, so I guess I'll try to land on this one, Mike. Where was the Trump administration when all this stuff was going on? The Trump is the commander-in-chief. He's in charge of Mark Milley. The people underneath him, were they not telling him? Was he being lied to? Did Trump himself, what was missing here? Because this wasn't under Joe Biden. This wasn't under Joe Biden. This was under Donald Trump. What happened?
Well, what happened is, I mean, just go through a simple thought experiment here. Let's just say a taxi driver, a popular Uber driver, made a bunch of viral YouTube videos and became so popular online that he was voted to be United States President, the Commander in Chief of the U.S. military. Does anyone think that the top brass of the United States military, our Central Intelligence Agency, our National Security Agency, would just hand over their secrets to this, random taxi cab driver who got voted, to be U.S. President because of his popular TikTok videos? There's no way. They would not hand over the keys to the kingdom here. The U.S. Intelligence Committee and community and our military brass in early 2017 were having internal public deliberations about whether or not they should even tell Trump what's going on with his own military and intelligence. And there was a shell game the entire time. If you remember, this actually came out post-presidency I don't know if it was Mark Esper or one of the former secretaries of defense came out and said that actually they had sort of played shell games with Trump, and they sort of lied to him about how many troops were actually in Syria and what they were really doing there, and that they sort of deliberately withheld certain nominations until they knew that he was going to be out. That they were constantly going behind his back. They were constantly giving him partial or false information in order to try to rig his decision-making process to be more favorable to the institutional military agenda that has existed from Truman to Trump. And that's particularly this seize Eurasia policy. The fact is the military is the battering ram of the commercial and financial forces that these military officials all float into to make their millions post-government, just like Mark Milley is surfing on cash, on tidal waves of cash from all of his speaker fees and book deal and the sinecures that he's getting from these exact firms, or they all go into these hedge funds or these Goldman funds to do macroeconomic forecasting because they happen to have buddies still in the agency who tell them what countries are about to be overthrown, so you know what you can loot next. And so these firms all have been invested in this seize Eurasia policy because this Eurasian subcontinent sits on $75 trillion worth of natural resources. All these U.S. multinational corporations have already invested the infrastructure for that looting process. If there's peace with Russia, if there's detente with respect to our CIA regime change operations in Central and Eastern Europe or in Central Asia, all those investments go to donuts, basically. And so they want to destroy any president who might get in the way of that particular seize Eurasia policy. And what's really, really interesting also, Jesse, is go back and look at the Transition Integrity Project documents that were that became public in June 2020, where in June 2020, you had the former head of the RNC, Michael Steele, the former head of the DNC, Donna Brazile. You had Lawrence Wilkerson and a ton of these U.S. Army generals and colonels who all got together with this simulation plan of how to stop Trump from winning the election, even if he won the Electoral College. They ran four simulations. In simulation three, on page 17, it's on my Twitter timeline, at Mike Ben Cyber. If you look this up, they specifically planned that if Trump won the election in a fair and square electoral victory, they could still steal it and have Joe Biden be inaugurated by provoking a breakdown on January 6th. They even said the date in June 2020. These military, intelligence, and political folks at the highest level of our DC power structure literally plotted to, quote, invoke a breakdown on January 6th. That was the move played in the simulation by Joe Biden's surrogate, effectively role-playing Joe Biden in that simulation. Who was the surrogate? It was John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager and now runs the largest slush fund in all of Washington, a $380 billion green energy fund, as the White House czar.
Yeah, what a shock. John Podesta's name pops up. Mike, I got to be honest with you. I'm the most cynical, hardened person that I know, and you're the only guest I think I've ever talked to in my life who actually manages to shock me at how deep this goes and how evil these freaking people are. Mike, you come back anytime. Well, after all that, I need to lighten the mood. How about you? Let's go to that next.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And, you know, I should caution you with something. You do want to be careful scaring your parents once they get past a certain age. However, videos of people scaring parents and children will never stop being funny. And this is funny.
All right, here's the deal, guys. My dad's cutting grass on a lawnmower down there. I'm about to scare the shit out of him. Here we go.
That sucks. I'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.